The Spectator is searching for the UK's brightest entrepreneurs to enter the Spectator Economic Innovator of the Year Awards in partnership with Charles Stanley Wealth Managers. If you have a business that disrupts an existing market, a smart new way of doing things, or something that has incredible social impact, then apply by 1st of July at spectator.co.uk/innovator.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily and sometimes more than daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Isabel Hardman and Fraser Nelson. And we just had the news that Matt Hancock has resigned. Isabel, can you talk us through the shift since Friday when it seemed that Number 10 was backing him?
Yeah, so at the Downing Street lobby briefing on Friday, the Prime Minister's spokesman was insisting that he had accepted Matt Hancock's apology for breaking the coronavirus guidance and that he considered the matter closed. And despite there being a lot of questions that were thrown at the spokesman, then his insistence was that the matter was closed. And it was quite obvious the matter wasn't closed because, as I say, there were a lot of questions about whether actually Downing Street had sought assurances that he hadn't broken the law rather than just the guidance, which is what Hancock and Downing Street were sticking to. There were also obviously the questions about the appointment of Gina Colodangelo, which Number 10 said was done in the correct way. But there were questions about when this relationship began, whether it was before her appointment as non-executive director, in which case there was an issue around the integrity of that process, or whether it was after, in which case it may have meant that he had broken the ministerial code in terms of workplace relationships. And of course, it had a huge amount of cut through. All of us going about our daily business today have noticed that people have picked up on it. Katie, I think you heard 20-year-olds talking about it in the park.
Live from my hen do.
whilst on your hen do, let's just take a moment to celebrate Katie's commitment to this story. And Conservative MPs were really upset about it because, as with Barnard Castle and Dominic Cummings, they were getting a lot of messages from constituents who were saying, I didn't get to hold the hand of my dying mother before she went. And what's this? Matt Hancock having a clinch with a woman in office hours against his own guidance. How hypocritical is this? This isn't fair. And I think there was a sort of mounting sense that it was very difficult for him to hold on to his job. He could probably have stayed, but I think what would have then happened would have been very difficult for him to do anything, to announce anything. He would have had to have sent a junior minister or relied on Boris Johnson to enforce new restrictions in the autumn, for instance, if there's a surge. And so I think it became increasingly clear. Now, Number 10 have been saying that the decision to go was his rather than Boris Johnson sacking him. And I think we can talk about the reasons why Number 10 wouldn't want it to appear that Boris Johnson has sacked him. But yes, he's gone.
Fraser, on Friday, there was a sense that Matt Hancock was going to try and hang on. Number 10 were backing him. Since then, we've had a few more revelations. There's been the video footage in terms of that clinch rather than just the photo. Do you think Matt Hancock's decision today, complete with the video he's put forward, was preempting more revelations that would come out?
I suspect there were two factors. One is the fury of his colleagues and his constituents. I mean, normally Tory MPs express their fury to each other in sort of WhatsApp groups, but the ominous thing here was there was nothing in the Tory party WhatsApp group, but they were just too angry to write it down. And because they also thought they were being exposed now, because they'd voted for Matt Hancock's pretty stringent don't hug anybody rules, only to find out that Hancock himself had been doing a lot more than that. But also there are signs of a story moving on in a way which is quite unhelpful to him. The Sunday Times Tomorrow, for example, has got a suggestion that the two of them had been together in this G7 health summit just 4 weeks after they were pictured. And there's a cabinet source with a quote that I'll read out here, because if the cabinet is saying this, you can see how things were going. The cabinet source says, "She went with him to the G7 health minister summit. Did he disclose this to the PM? If he was shown to be shagging on the taxpayers' expense, he had to go. If there had been further breaches, he had to go. He's been Puritan in chief for the government, and now it turns out he's a massive lying hypocrite." Pretty strong language to come from a cabinet source. And I imagine that was only going to be magnified. I was certainly talking to some government ministers on Friday evening who were incandescent and basically thinking that they were trying to behave, they were trying not to say anything to upset the line whereby number 10 accepted his apology, but that line simply wasn't holding. Now, of course, we're at the situation where Matt Hancock is supposed to stand up in the House of Commons on Monday and tell us if he's going to extend the lockdown. There's a two-week break. It's his decision to make. And that would have been a very difficult decision, speech for him to have given had he stayed on as health secretary. So I think when it was clear to him that the attempt to apologise to number 10, not to the public, not to his wife, but to number 10, and have that apology accepted, that was not going to draw a line into it, as Isabel says in her blog. So it makes a lot of sense for him to go now, because it does look like the story was going to get a lot worse.
And Isabel, we've talked about the reaction within the party. We know that Matt Hancock is fairly unpopular with a certain section of the Tory party when it comes to lockdown and it comes to his position as the chief dove, as he has come to be known. So do you think there was a sense that ultimately MPs were turning against him quite quickly because of his previous hardline attitude on restrictions?
Yeah, I don't think he had a groundswell of support. If you compare his position to when Jeremy Hunt was in a real mess over his links to Rupert Murdoch when he was culture secretary, I didn't get the impression from MPs, even those who just wanted to keep their heads down during this, that they were going to turn up to the Commons on Monday and say supportive things about, you know, how unfortunate it was that he, you know, just happened to have a clinch in front of a CCTV camera. I don't think his PPS would have found it very easy to rally the troops around him and saying supportive things. And that, you know, as we've said on previous podcast episodes, this is a private matter line, which is normally perfectly valid when an MP has an affair or you know, evidence of infidelity in one way or another, just didn't hold because, as Fraser explained on Friday, Matt Hancock had involved himself in everyone else's private matters. And I think if you talk to MPs, they'll say that they've been paranoid over the past year and a bit that they or their spouses or their children will be exposed breaking lockdown guidance, often inadvertently or in a way that they think is sort of acceptable, and they've ended up sort of twisting and turning to avoid being seen to break guidance. And then to see this sort of this flagrant flouting of it, I think felt very sickening for a lot of them who spent the past year worried that they're going to get into trouble without even meaning to.
And Fraser, we now have the new appointment. What do you make of it?
Yes, Sajid Javid is back. It's about just over a year since he resigned as Chancellor, but he left on reasonable terms with Boris Johnson. He quit the government because he was complaining about the influence of Dominic Cummings, and he certainly feels he's been vindicated ever since. I know that Prime Minister and Sajid Javid have been in talks about his possible return to the cabinet. He was expected to have a pretty big position in a summer reshuffle, one that's now been delayed. There was even some speculation that he might return in some kind of deputy prime minister role. But to be health secretary, there's no doubt about it, one of the biggest jobs in the government right now, not only because we have to get out of the final stages of COVID, but there are so many operations to be done. The NHS waiting list is absolutely massive. Now, it is not entirely clear how this puts the COVID balance. Right now, one of the most important balances of powers is whether you're pro or anti-lockdown, and there's a relatively small number of people making that decision. Now, Boris Johnson had complained that he was outnumbered, that Michael Gove, Chris Whitty and Matt Hancock would liaise with each other, that they would get together, they would leak stories to the press, and they would basically try to bounce him into making a decision for longer lockdowns or with more stringent conditions. And I think Nadeem Zahawi, who had been mentioned as a potential health secretary, had been regarded as more liberal on this front. Sajid Javid, I would say, is a centrist. He has not been really complaining about lockdown stringency on the back benches, but nor has he been on the sort of the Whitty side advocating, for example, for lockdowns to be lasting longer than they have done. So that will probably make it a bit easier for Boris Johnson to push for a 19th of July reopening. But the big question is about travel. Now, on this, Sajid Javid, I imagine, will be pushing to liberalise the travel restrictions as soon as possible. He's quite globally minded. He's very much global Britain guy. He used to work in Singapore. He's a former banker. He's got a very strong views about the importance of Britain being connected to the rest of the world. Now, Matt Hancock had really been pushing for the travel restrictions. His idea was that we should adopt a kind of Australia system with freedom at home, but a wall around our country and not really letting in foreigners. He'd also been pushing for a form of immune privilege where the double vaccinated would be given freedoms which the unvaccinated would not. Now, I know that Sajid Javid will join Liz Truss, I imagine, in arguing for greater freedoms for travel. Where he will stand on immunoprivilege and vaccine passports, the other big question facing the cabinet, is not quite clear yet. But I think this does change the balance of power. The kind of Whitty Hancock dynamic will have been broken up. And Sajid Javid will come to this job with an economic head on. This is a former banker, a former chancellor, somebody who is acutely aware of all of the dynamics of this, that if you have longer restrictions, if you have travel restrictions, that will hurt the economy, and this will in turn have health consequences. So I imagine he'll be joining these dots in a way that Matt Hancock perhaps didn't. So a very interesting appointment, and one that I do think will mean a faster resumption of normal life.
And finally, Isabel, Downing Street ultimately did back Matt Hancock. He's made the decision to go. Do you think this is going to have political damage for the government in terms of what's happened? Or is, as I think some of Matt Hancock's supporters believe, this is a sensible decision, which then means that he has a way back in, and also in terms of political scandal that comes to an end?
Yeah, I think from Matt Hancock's career point of view, this probably is the least worst option, actually, in that he can depart government in a way that is linked to his private life, as opposed to his performance during the pandemic or the veracity of his claims, such as we put a protective ring around care homes and all the questions around how honest he was being with colleagues about testing targets and so on. You know, as Boris Johnson makes clear in his letter, that may open the door for him to be back in government in the not too distant future. But in terms of what this says about the government, notice that Labour are pushing very hard on the idea that Johnson should have sacked him as opposed to accepted his resignation. And you know, there are lots of reasons why Boris Johnson wouldn't want to sack somebody who'd had an extramarital liaison with somebody who was linked to taxpayers' money, not least because that all feels rather close to home for the Prime Minister, and it would open up questions about his own conduct. So it's from a sort of convenience point of view, a resignation is probably the best for Boris Johnson. But as Fraser wrote in The Telegraph this week, there is a sense that this government is sort of going adrift and starting to lose its focus, that the Prime Minister is losing his authority, that his ministers are not necessarily paying the full attention to the job that they might have claimed. I mean, this is Matt Hancock, who claimed that he gets up every morning and thinks, what must I do to protect life? Which, given recent revelations, just leaves him open to even more mockery than the mockery he received when he first said that.
Thank you, Isabel. Thank you, Fraser. And thank you for listening.